Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
To HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Mary Dick will be telling us a little bit about how disability has impacted her work. So, can you tell me a little bit about how your work has been impacted by disability in sport?
Sure. It's kind of the other way around, how I've impacted disability, but I will explain that a bit. I'm a retired professor, and one of the courses I was required to teach was adapted physical activity for people with disabilities. And as a person who had been involved in multiple sports and my expertise in sport management, I had not encountered a lot of disability and sport or disability and physical activity. And so I felt rather underprepared to teach that class, and so I began to seek out people in my community, people nationally who were involved in disability sport, so that I could understand not only what it meant to a person with disability, but what were the structures already in place for people with disabilities. So from there, that meant that I found out there isn't a lot of organization for people with disabilities. Sometimes there's only one or two people in a community with the same disability, and there isn't always opportunities. And so, based on my background and knowing I was needing to be involved in order to teach my class, I started organizing activities for people with disabilities so that I could better understand, and also I saw the value in providing those opportunities.
So, what were some of the most common disabilities you saw?
Well, first of all, I have a nephew who has fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, and so that was kind of my first exposure. And in his case, he was very athletic, but had not been in a regular school program. He had been in a pull-out program, and so he had not had the value of physical education class to know how games even worked. And so that was kind of where I started a bit. So there's certainly some areas that as games get quite technical and tactical, that if there is some cognitive delay, then it gets a little bit more complicated. I have a wheelchair basketball program, and it's very unique. It was a program that was running previously as a competitive program, and then I decided to do a drop-in program so that you could just show up on a Thursday. We have the chairs from the Lethbridge Association, and what ended up dropping in was actually a very interesting cross-section of people, from athletes who had been involved in Special Olympics, so may have some developmental delays, to Paralympics, who had participated in other sports, and then regular community members who either had acquired mobility issues and used a wheelchair or crutches, or had been born perhaps with spina bifida, who then had difficulty with walking, so they had used a chair as well. So for the most part, that's the wheelchair basketball program. My other group was a soccer program that a colleague and I ran. It was called Soccability. It was for children with disabilities, but predominantly we saw children with autism. because of her involvement in the schools with autism. We did have a child with visual impairment, so we adapted by putting a grocery bag around the ball so he could hear it flutter, and putting some speakers up so we knew which way to travel. So I've kind of looked at a wide range of disabilities.
So, in that sense, what are some of the key benefits for an athlete with a disability? I'd imagine being out there and experiencing that kind of freedom and just being a part of a team, working on a common cause, would have something of a mental health impact regardless of the primary disability.
Oh, for sure. I think even if you start with the physical benefits, I always say everybody has a heart. So that heart actually has to be worked to have a healthy lifestyle. Unless their disability involves a heart impairment, everybody needs to work their heart. So from a physiological perspective, I would start with cardiovascular, which is the heart. And then if you look at bone development, and I know sometimes in different areas, understanding that stress on bones actually is good for bones to develop. And so that's really important. I know it's kind of interesting. One of the guys that has been involved in wheelchair, and he has a T10 paralysis, so kind of belly button. He says, I know my abdominal muscles are getting stronger, even though I can't feel them from just the work of playing basketball. So I think being able to keep your muscles active, the ones that you can control or not control. So that's the physiological side. I think there, as you mentioned, mental health for sure. Being able to get, and the social aspect, being able to actually get out and be with people, having a reason to get involved. There's certainly that's part of it. So social benefits, psychological benefits, we all know that physical activity does reduce anxiety and does reduce depression and has an impact on that. So you're right, there's lots of benefits to physical activity for people with disabilities. One of the things I wanted to mention, though, is to have physical activity for its pure joy, as opposed to thinking of it as therapy.
So, in your time doing this work, is there any individual success case that stands out for you?
I don't think there's one. I just love the the groups that I'm involved in, to see how much joy they get from coming together, how happy they are to see each other. We have just really formed good, healthy groups, I guess I would say, with each group. And I don't know if there's really a case of that person really came into their own, as much as each time they have an event together, it makes the day worthwhile.
So, you were also involved with Deaf Volleyball, I understand?
Yes, that's true. I am the manager for the Canadian National Deaf and Hard of Hearing indoor and beach volleyball teams. Not very many people know that there is a Deaf Olympics. It actually was formed prior to even the Paralympic movement. The interesting part about the Deaf Olympics is everyone that works at the Deaf Olympics is deaf. So, and with that, there is a lot of sign language going on, and each country pretty much has their own sign language, as well as there's an international sign language. So my involvement there has been managing about two programs and I have a program for men and a program for women, indoor and beach. And so that's allowed participation at the international level of our Canadian athletes.
So it brings up an interesting question. In terms of a coach relaying information quickly to a player, I'd imagine they have to keep sort of vigilant in order to catch the sign language.
Well, in the case of volleyball, it's a lot of stomping. So stomping on the floor to get a person's attention. At present, our volleyball coaches are hearing, and so everything is conveyed through an interpreter. Obviously, it would be ideal if we had high-level coaches who were deaf and knew sign language, but we don't. And that's the case in many of the deaf sports, is that the highest level of coaches are not necessarily deaf. Most of them are hearing, and so we do go through an interpreter.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Deborah Koblick from ISAAC. So, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the pandemic's impact on persons with disabilities. I understand there was a recent article in relation to this that got your attention.
Sure. So I think, like that article says in the Toronto Star, a lot of the problems we're seeing during the pandemic are pre-existing problems, and there's no exception for people with disabilities. So it's bringing concerns forward that have already been there, but what the pandemic has done has exacerbated those concerns. So we're seeing that people who already have disproportionate rates of poverty, who have disabilities, are now experiencing greater poverty. People who are on the Ontario Disability Support Program on social assistance are having an even tougher time dealing with rising cost of groceries. There's been a lot of rental evictions in Ontario. But also what we're seeing is people with disabilities have not been consulted directly or consistently in terms of how the pandemic is managed and how, like, what recovery will look like. We're certainly not in a recovery moment right now with Omicron, but there's been a few moments in the pandemic where we thought we were approaching it, and people with disabilities have not been central to those debates.
So what have some of the key considerations been that persons with disabilities should have been included in?
So I think, first of all, there's a lot of support for disabilities are very diverse, as I know you know. But I think one statement we can make is that the supports that people might use and require when they have a disability, they would have had more limited access to them during the pandemic. So this could be, because group supports shut down or because of requirements for isolation that we were all under during lockdowns, people didn't have access to some of these services that aren't extra for them. They're actually critical to their daily lives. And I think for people who are low income with disabilities, a lot of the free services and drop-in services were shut down. So there was no understanding of kind of what isolation would mean for those communities. Also, there was not enough understanding of how some people with disabilities are going to be at a much higher risk when they contracting COVID, and also what would happen if they do contract it. And I remember reading another article about a mother who was fighting to get her son, who has Down syndrome, to the top of the list for vaccines, because if he contracted it, he would be at a much higher rate of death. So, and then the one last thing I want to mention was Doug Ford's triage protocols, which the disability community and one of my sister clinics, ARCH, really were spoken about, because they felt that it put people with disabilities at a disadvantage should doctors have to choose who gets a ventilator or not.
What's interesting about that is I just recently did a case study, an interview on how addictions treatment has been affected by all this. Not being able to offer an in-person program would seem to negate some of the effectiveness of the services there. And if it's something that a person needs to stay not only healthy, but also safe in a lot of ways, uh-huh, one would think that would be something that's worth protecting.
Well, and it's no surprise that we've seen an absolute dramatic increase in the opioid crisis and in drug-related deaths. So people who are suffering from addictions, they've been very hard hit by some of these restrictions. I don't by any means want to argue for or against restrictions. that's not kind of what I'm articulating, but I want people to think about how this pandemic and the way we've gone about it has hit different people differently. And for people who are poor and have disabilities, and also if you add gender precarious status, precarious immigration status, or intersections of race to that, you're adding multiple levels of difficulty in getting through the pandemic and in staying safe and healthy and surviving.
So if you could see anything added to what's available for persons with disabilities in terms of these basic human rights protections and all this, what would it be?
I think instead of, and I mean, I think we're moving, I mean, I'm optimistic that we're moving to a place where people with disabilities are not an afterthought, but are central at every table. I'm hopeful that we can keep pushing for that. I think what that article from the Toronto Star that we kind of originally connected around said is that we're going to see more disabilities coming out of the pandemic with things like long-haul COVID, or even, you know, we might see much higher rates. I think we will see much higher rates of PTSD among first responders and higher rates of mental health disability. So I think it's that if we've been ignoring it, we're not going to be able to anymore. And the number one thing is to keep people with disabilities at the centralized decision tables at every level of government, and to make sure that there is a breadth of disabilities represented. Because just from the work I do with people with social assistance, we know that episodic and invisible disabilities have a harder time proving eligibility. I think the other thing to consider, we're going to need to get creative in ways to accommodate people with disabilities, and I think if we get people to the table, they know, people with disabilities know what they need, and they can help to create a recovery going forward that engages them and integrates them in a better way than they were before the pandemic.
Well, you're absolutely right about the fact that it's not about able-bodied society just assuming this will work for a person with a disability. Coming
yes,
at it
exactly.
From lived experience, they can say, I've tried this, this worked, I've tried this, this didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think the one, I think that is maybe shocking to many people. One thing that I know is shocking to people in the communities that I work with is we see people who weren't able to contact caseworkers and support because they don't have enough money for internet because of some of the poverty that people with disabilities experience. And so when you have people who have regular jobs and who are isolating, not even being aware of that lived experience, one of the things that we've been arguing for is increased digital access, that it's like housing and clothing and food. People need it. It's not an extra service. So even hearing what people's barriers are and also what aren't barriers, hearing from them where they are capable and what they actually do want to direct for their own lives is something that I think we still need to make headways with, and is the greatest thing we could do to have a better future for people with disabilities in this country.
I'd like to thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
So you're hanging with your inner circle. Maybe you're making cocktails. Maybe you're packing bowls. Even while we're distancing, it's important to remember, alcohol and cannabis each mess with your driving skills. Be cool. Make sure you and your friends get home safe. Take a cab if you need to. A few bucks could save a life. And we can do it again next weekend. A message from Arrive Alive, Drive Sober.
to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Mary Dick from the University of Lethbridge, and from Deborah Koblug, who told us a little bit about Isaac. In this segment of our show, Catherine McGivory will be telling us a little bit about her disabilities work. So, can you tell me a little bit about your disabilities background and work?
Yep. So I became a physio in 2016, and pretty much from the get-go, I've been working with kids who have disabilities. So it started off at a clinic in rural Western Australia, and yeah, I just kind of got stuck into the field within that. And while I was doing that, it was actually during the rollout of the NDIS in Australia, which I'm sure your listeners might have heard of before. So it was pretty cool to be involved within the disability community during that time. It was really exciting to see all the new supports that they were receiving and all the opportunities they had during that time. Yeah, it was. So that's kind of how I got started in it.
So for those who might not be as familiar with the NDIS, can you take us through a little bit of that?
Yeah, for sure. So the NDIS is a national insurance plan to help disabled people in Australia. And it's basically funded publicly. And the states will each kind of hand out financial and other support to people based on their needs. So that will completely vary person to person, even if they have the same diagnosis. But it basically just means that they were getting a lot more support after that rollout than they were previously. So all of a sudden, you know, kids had access to physiotherapy more than once a week if they needed to, which is where I was mostly involved. But they also got more at-home care and more opportunities for their unpaid carers to go back to work or to school. And the people who are disabled themselves had more early intervention and more support in that way so that they could get to a point where they are working later in life too. So it's basically, like, long story short, a really good publicly funded insurance program that just helps to take care of a vulnerable group of people in Australia.
So I would imagine that early intervention and early physio would prevent further severity of some disabilities, like an ounce of prevention now for a pound of cure later.
Exactly. And the brain itself as the organ is, it's a lot more what we call plastic when you're younger. So especially within the first 5 years of life, there's a lot that we can do with early intervention to increase their physical skills later on in life. So it's really important to take advantage of that time. And I think the Australian system has been set up really well in that regard.
So recently you've become a part of Every Canadian Counts and sort of push to bring a similar program here at home.
Yeah, definitely. I think it would just be such a big help. I mean, I think every country should have an insurance program like this, but being Canadian, it just feels especially close to home. You know, that I would really love for every Canadian to have that opportunity.
So, in your work and your travels internationally as well, have you ever encountered any myths or stereotypes concerning the disability population?
Yes, definitely lots. I'm not sure if I can think of one off the top of my head here, but I think in a more general sense, I think especially in Canada, I notice that actual like disabled people are often missing from the conversation, and it's really important to me to uplift those voices, you know, rather than talking myself for too long, and it's just important that, you know, they have a say in what's happening and what decisions are being made at the government level and what plans are being in place, because there's going to be a lot of stereotypes and a lot of myths if, you know, they're not a part of the conversation. So I think that's really important, but that's kind of a general answer to your question, but I think there are a lot of myths and stereotypes around for sure.
So, in your work, has there been any success story concerning the disability population that stands out for you?
Oh gosh, yeah, there's lots that I can think of. Given that I've only been a physio for 5 years now, or a little over 5 years, I haven't had any previous patients, you know, grow too far since I started seeing them, but I have had a lot of success stories, especially in Australia in that system, and one that stands out for me is a little guy I was working with who has cerebral palsy and really, really wanted to play cricket, which is quite a big sport there. And he was a wheelchair user, and you know, we were working through intensive physiotherapy, you know, kind of batches. We'd do like 3 really solid weeks of multiple hours a day every day, and then he would go back to his home in a rural community and come back for another batch of intensive physio. And after a year, he was able to stand up for, you know, a couple minutes and hit the cricket bat and do that. And that was such a meaningful experience for him and his family. And I just think, like, that's amazing that, you know, that intensive bout of physio could help someone achieve such a massive goal, and those are definitely the types of goals young people will have and dreams that they want to accomplish, and I think it's really cool that the country is supporting the ways that they can get there and funding that and seeing value in that, because it is really valuable.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need to keep pushing forward, what would you say?
It's without a doubt the right thing to do for each other. You know, it just comes down to that at the end of the day. In my mind, it's that simple. It's the right thing to do. Our society and our you know, the way we live wasn't designed with everyone in mind, and we can't really change those decisions that were made in the past, but we do have control over how we go forward. And I think doing this kind of national insurance plan and funding better services and improving opportunities for people to work or experience life to the best way that they can, I mean, I think that's like the bare minimum that we should be doing. So that's kind of how I see it, and I hope that other Canadians see it the same way. So that's kind of how I think about the situation. And on top of that, there's also loads of financial benefits that I think are being considered as well, and Australia's been a really good example of that. So it's just that there's no downside. Like, it's just something that we have to do. Yeah.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yep. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Of course. My friends, no matter where we come from, no matter what our disability story, our voices count. For every person in society, everyone, everywhere, has a story to share, something that makes them unique and special, and worthy of contributing in this life. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.